As you know, dear listener, this program does not exist for you. It's not for the gladies of the potties. It's for this dilapidated old presenter. Because I like to learn things. And boy, have I learned some stuff in reading a little book by Dr. Emma Christopher. Let me give you a hint of what lies ahead. Now, when Britain was defeated in the War of Independence, no, we're descendants, Crims. We weren't at that point an option. But the Brits had a lot of slave trading ports in West Africa. Where better to send the lowest of the low? After all, it was very difficult to get free men to volunteer to go to places that almost certainly meant a death sentence because of disease. Of that more in due course. Now, what happened to many of these convicts during a disastrous West African scheme led to the colonisation of Australia. We were an afterthought. All this and more in Emma's new book. Emma, incidentally, is a preposterously well-credentialed historian of the slave trade. His CV's, God help us. She's currently Australian Research Fellow in the Department of History at the University of Sydney and the author of a well-titled A Merciless Place, the lost story of Britain's convict disaster in Australia and how it led to the settlement of... convict disaster in Africa and how it led to the settlement of Australia. Emma, welcome to the Little Wireless Program.
Hello.
I'm 71. Why didn't I know this earlier?
Well, it's always just been dealt with in a sentence or two in the story of Australian settlement. But it was just a couple of sentences that intrigued me and I went to find out more.
Well, I'm bloody glad you did because what you've discovered is quite astonishing. So let's go back to the War of Independence. Mm-hmm. I didn't realise the Brits had sent something like 50,000 naughty people to their colonies there.
Yeah, all of their colonies, not just the ones that became the USA, but also the Caribbean colonies, lots of different places that they could send them to in the Americas. But by the time of the Revolution, it was just Virginia and Maryland that was still accepting convicts. So when they revolted, there was no opportunity to send them there anymore, and they started looking around for something else.
Well, we are going to be describing hell on earth shortly, and I find it rather charming that the bloke who thought this up was called William Eden.
Yes, well, that's a nice little aside, yeah.
Tell us about him. Tell us about his grand plan.
Well, Eden had an earlier kind of idea that Africa could be a place to kind of balance out the American colonies on the western side of the Atlantic. And they had kind of grandiose ideas that there could be similarly profitable colonies in Africa. And so when the revolution happens, they kind of go back to some of those ideas with Eden in Eden's ideas in mind and think, well, wait a minute, we could have convict colonies in Africa that would compensate us for the loss of the American colonies and become a place for the convicts, and that would be an ideal situation.
But there'd been an attempt earlier which had come a cropper.
There had been an attempt to send some convicts to the region in the far, far west of West Africa, the bit that bulges out into the Atlantic, where some convicts had gone as soldiers. And yeah, it had also been a disaster, not just for the convicts, but for the free soldiers as well, for the same reason that all these things were largely disasters, and that they have no resistance whatsoever to malaria or yellow fever or all those things that carry people off within a few weeks.
So this is the era of Charles O'Hara.
It is, yes. Charles O'Hara, who has the unique infamy of having been captured in battle by both Washington and Bonaparte.
Yeah, well, look, some of Australia's governor generals and certainly state governors had very dubious military histories themselves. So, now, I love the instructions that he was given when he took up his new appointment. He was commissioned to appoint a school teacher to ensure the rule of law and to make sure the Church of England was there so that the locals could be induced to embrace the Protestant religion. What more does a decent society need?
And it's so incredibly ridiculous. I mean, the British had very, very little idea of what this place that they professed to be giving the Anglican religion to was. They knew a little bit about the ports along the coast from the slave trading, but they knew absolutely nothing about the people any distance inland whatsoever.
But they didn't seem to know anything about anything. They imagined prodigious quantities of rice, wax, cotton, indigo and tobacco.
It was wishful thinking on a grand scale, I think. Yeah. But, I mean, you know, tobacco is also grown in Virginia. That's what they're losing in the revolution.
So they're just extrapolating from that.
Yeah.
Well, one of the problems is the aforementioned diseases. Charlie arrives with 300... Sorry, I shouldn't laugh. This is awful. He arrives with 300 redcoats to form a garrison. And within 12 months, 200 of them have carked it.
Yeah, it wasn't a great great success, that mission.
Stop laughing. This is serious.
Yes, it was a disaster.
Oh, dear, oh, dear, oh, dear. Who ran these Gold Coast slave trading forts? Because I understand they weren't formally owned by the Brits or by the government.
No, that's right. And that's what leads to a lot of the problems that come in the convict era. They're run by independent companies there, the Royal African Company and then the Company of Merchants Trading to Africa is its long name. And they...
Look, just stop there for a second, because when I read this, I thought this was the best company name in the history of companies. This is 1660, and this company is incorporated in London. The Company of Royal Adventurers Trading to Africa.
Yeah, that's the precursor of the Royal African Company. They got slightly more concise with the names. Not a whole lot, but...
And so they owned these joints.
Yeah.
And the government really couldn't control them.
No. The government would have liked to have been able to, say, have some of our convicts to work there. But it's because the company keeps saying, no, 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 we don't want the convicts, that they have this a lot of the problems that ensue.
Now, this is the slave trade, largely. Many people will be quite shocked to know that Britain was so... deeply and, in fact, successfully involved. They shouldn't be, of course, but they will be.
Yeah, Britain is certainly one of the major players in the slave trade. It doesn't trade for... It gets out of the slave trade, at least legally, by 1808, which is relatively early. It's only been trading for several hundred years. But, I mean, it doesn't go on to the 1860s like the Brazilians do. But it's a very major... Britain is a major trader.
And, of course, the trade in totality transformed Britain, France, Holland, the US banks, corporations, companies, revered educational institutions, built or expanded on wealth from that trade.
Yeah, it absolutely did change the face of the world at that time. And still today, of course, we kind of take it for granted that African-American culture and music and everything else is predominant throughout the world. But, of course, that comes from the slave trade in large part.
Given that they were so successful in slave trading, you might have thought they would welcome the notion of pretty much free labour in the form of convicts, but they didn't.
No. They would, it seems that they would as well, because they can't keep people alive in the slave trading forts. They can't recruit enough soldiers in their forts because they die quicker than they can recruit them. But they don't want the convicts because they've premised their trade on the idea that white people are superior. And if you have a lot of convicts coming to work who are not going to uphold that idea, then you have a real problem for yourself. The other issue is that the convicts are not going to be loyal, which of course is what happened. They were the ones that were sent out to fight the Dutch for control of the Dutch slave trading forts, quickly run away to the Dutch and quite like the treatment they get there instead. So it's a loyalty issue as well.
Now, let me just clarify this. The slave traders, the British slave traders, had to believe that they were superior to give some sort of perverse moral justification to what they were doing.
Yeah, pretty much. It intensifies and it becomes much more theoretical as the centuries of slave trading go on. But it's pretty hard to justify that unless you consider that, you know, you yourself as a white trader are superior, because otherwise, what on earth are you doing? And how can you possibly you know, justify the treatment that you are meeting out.
And Richard Camplin, who was one of the heavies, one of the corporate heavies, argued that in the presence of convicts, previously awed Africans would soon learn to despise the white man.
Yeah, it's this real kind of delusion that the Africans had this great revered honour for white men, and they knew they were really great and everything. And that's Camplin saying, you know, look, this honour that they feel for us is going to fall apart if you send all these, you know, disease-ridden poxed convicts from Newgate. This is, you know, we're not going to look that omnipotent anymore.
You're listening to LNL, ABC Radio National, and I'm talking to historian Emma Christopher about the story of the British sending convicts to West Africa and the role this would in due course play in Australia. How did the British government get around these complaints?
Well, they cheated. First of all, what happens is once the Dutch enter the American War of Independence, which is still going on at this time, they put convicts into the army, which is actually an old tradition. There's an old tradition that you can swap your sentence for the army. But this is actually a kind of subversion of that, because they have no intention of these people going into the regular army. These are independent companies that they've raised specifically to go to Africa, and the intention is to dump them there. But of course,
with the certain knowledge that most of them will die.
And they know that they are cheating the company, because of course the company cannot tell the British Army what to do. So it gets around the company's objections by sending them to fight for the Dutch slave trading court's forts, which the company has got to think is a good idea.
Now, we're going on and on with what terrible miscreants these people were, but I guess they really weren't all that bad.
The convicts or the...
The convicts.
Oh, the convicts.
Weren't they there for stealing hankies?
One of them was, yes. One of them who spends decades there. He doesn't die very soon, and he spends decades there with stolen a teaspoon.
Really, I was joking, but this guy's there for stealing a teaspoon?
Yeah.
Must have been a hell of a spoon.
And he actually gets to go back to Britain to testify in one of the murder trials that happens afterwards. And then he's not allowed to stay in Britain. He then has to go back to West Africa to live out the end of his life for that very elaborate teaspoon.
Emma, given that this has all been kept from me for all these years, I've been denied this information until you came along, how did you get the information? Was it just sort of lying there ticking away in the archives? Was it easy to research?
It was all sitting there, but it wasn't sitting there in the place that most convict information is sitting there. I think that was why people thought that people who were interested in the convict past and the Australian past had looked in the place that convict records are kept in London. And it wasn't there. It was because I have always generally worked on the slave trade that I thought, wait a minute, if you go and look in the slave fort records, it might have the names. And it did. When I went there, it then would list, you know, John Smith convict. And interestingly, in a lot of the fort records, they were listed below the rest of the white men, but above the free blacks who worked there.
Tell the listener the story of Kenneth McKenzie.
Well, Kenneth McKenzie is a Highland Scot who was in the army, and he offers to raise an independent company, hoping to go to the American War of Independence to earn enough prize money in battle to keep his ancestral home. And unfortunately for Kenneth McKenzie, he gets sent to Africa with convicts, where he goes very quickly mad. And he starts cheating them. He starts trying to keep the food that he's been given by the government and selling it for his own profit, and all kinds of other crazy things, which eventually become... lead to murder is the worst of his crimes.
So is he, well, he can't be typical, but he's emblematic of what went wrong.
Yeah, he's very emblematic of what went wrong. I mean, he really does. It's a cliche to say he lost his mind in West Africa, because people at the time, Brits at this time, really thought that the sun, the kind of heat of the sun, could cause you to go mad. So it's kind of a cliche to say that he went mad, but I actually think he quite literally did. We know from his earlier divorce, and it was very, very rare at this point to get divorced. There was like two in Scotland. And we know from that he had syphilis, so he was probably taking mercury, which actually could cause you to go literally mad.
It also causes you to grow much taller in hot weather. Now, Mackenzie, tell us about slave holes.
Well, slave holes, I myself have wondered very, very much what they meant by slave holes. What is traditionally meant by slave holes is the dungeons, the barracoons underneath the slave castles where the slaves were held when they were whilst they were waiting slave ships to come and buy them. So they're kind of places, kind of warehouses almost, that you get a whole shipload of slaves together. They could also have been using it to mean a kind of black hole of Calcutta thing, in terms of it being the prison that they put the sailors in when they were drunk and rebellious, which happened often.
Hmm. It's just such a compelling term. Mm. Now, Mr. Kenneth Mackenzie, syphilis or not, decides he's going to start a plantation using whites as workers.
Well, he buys the land, which is near Cape Coast Castle, the centre of British rule in West Africa, and he buys some slaves to work on it, and they, of course, quickly run away, because the other reason this is a bad idea is because if you keep your slaves in Africa, they can run away. So then he gets some of his soldiers to work alongside the slaves who are still there, and this is extremely problematic for the watching slave traders.
What was killing the whites? Was it malaria? What were the main diseases?
Malaria, yellow fever, stomach complaints, they're just completely unset up for the environment, the hard work, everything.
Going back to the fact that simple black people were meant to be awed by the whites, surely the fact that they sort of kept falling over and dying in huge numbers might have taken some of the luster off.
I don't think there's anything very genuine about this idea that they were awed. It's just purely delusional.
Yes, but we're talking about delusion on delusion on delusion.
Yeah.
Are they getting a bit worried back in London about this extraordinary saga?
They're definitely worried when they hear about the murder. When they hear that Kenneth Mackenzie has committed a murder, then it all falls apart. The actual dying of people, that doesn't matter so much in itself. The problem is that some of them have been respited from death. That's being given the King's Mercy. And if the King's Mercy just means that you go to Africa and die within a few weeks, then there's questions about what that means. And that's a bit of a problem.
Is there anyone in this sorry story who shows a scintilla of decency in regard to the slaves? I'm rereading the terminology, of course. You know, they were just goods. Slave traders saw their African victims as commodities, lots for auction, cargoes, etc.
Well, this is just immediately prior to the era that the abolitionists are starting to come to the fore in Britain and the US. But even they tried to do a lot of good in humanitarian terms, but they were certainly nothing that we would today call egalitarian on the whole.
You mentioned murder, Mackenzie murdering. He murdered one of the convict soldiers, yeah?
Yeah.
Under what circumstances and why?
Well, the convict that he murders, may or may not be his. That
there's
would be,
more
that
to this.
Would
there's
be,
more to this story.
That would be very exciting. Yes. But no, he murders him. He may or may not be his nephew. The convict in question has, many years earlier, in one of his first crimes, actually given the name Kenneth Mackenzie as his own name. So they could very well have been related. Certainly the convict, who I call William Murray to distinguish him from the other Kenneth Mackenzie, had always said that he was his nephew. And Murray, I think, is rather too like Mackenzie in that he also runs amok in West Africa, starts stealing food, starts doing all kinds of things. But Mackenzie has always had a soft spot for him, and he's not in the common ranks of the convict soldiers. He's educated, he's of a different class background, and he's put in charge of teaching them to drill. At one point, he has complete command of one of the slave trading forts, which is just an insane idea. And he keeps running away and just basically doing, you know, things that are not what he's supposed to be doing. And so eventually Mackenzie loses patience with him and sentences him to death without any court-martial, without any kind of legal justification. And instead of murdering him or putting him to death in any way that could have been justified, he gets some of the convict soldiers to tie him to the muzzle of a cannon, and then gets one of the other poor convict soldiers to fire the cannon so that he's eviscerated.
Oh, dear, 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 dear. I find it odd that the Brits can turn a blind eye to the suffering, the death toll that's going on there, and focus on one murder. But so be it. Look, they're going to have to read the book because we're just touching on it. Link this to Australia, if you wouldn't mind.
Well, the murder has something to do with it. When all these stories start going back to England, it starts to all go very wrong, and they realise they just cannot keep sending convicts to the slave trading forts. And the first plan to have a convict colony in West Africa is, again, when they have an inquiry about it, it's just going to be the same problems, too close to the slave trade, all those things. Then there's one very last plan, which is a bit half-hearted, really, to have a convict colony in what is today Namibia, but they find no drinking water there, which I actually think was someone lying to them, really. And then, you know, they look around and go, what options have we got? And the land that Captain Cook saw seems like a good option. It's far, far away, and it's got a lot of positive things going for it, from what they know.
Emma, this should be absolutely a prologue to any history of Australia. Mm-hmm. We should all know this.
Yeah, I think people know, I mean, historians know one sentence. There was probably some convicts that went to Africa, or, you know, a bit more than that if they've worked on it, but not a great deal more than that. They kind of roughly know about the colony at Lemaine and Das Voltas. But the actual story of the convicts that went to Africa has really just not been known much at all.
How did you get into the slave history bizzo? Because I didn't have time to even hint at your CV, but boy, you've done a lot on slavery.
people often ask me that question. I think I fell in love with West Africa a long time ago and its history and its people, and so that's where it's led me.
Emma, I'm glad it led you there because it led you into the studio. Emma Christopher, Australian Research Fellow in the Department of History at the University of Sydney. She came to the studio heavily manacled, the author of A Merciless Place, The Lost History of Britain's Convict Disaster in Africa, and How It Led to the Settlement of Australia, which is the hell of a long title, published by Allen and Unwin. On our next, we will take a close look at the power of those bloody opinion polls. And now I think it would be extremely nice of you if you stuck around for the news on ABC Radio National, which is probably about the bloody election. And we'll see you later.